Well, it happened just like I knew it would. We got a force majeure letter from our helium supplier today at our laboratory. Our supplier is a company called Airgas. And Airgas has sent out this letter regarding declaration of excuse of performance / force majeure condition to customers supplied with helium from Airgas USA LLC. And, of course, I think it was 3 weeks ago that I told my lab, I even mentioned it on this podcast, I told my lab people, I said, look, you better just order up all the helium you're going to need for the next year plus. Do it now, I said. And they were like, why? I'm like, just trust me. Just order up helium, like, freaking do it. Just get all the helium you can. I'm like, okay. So, you know, they call the supplier, like, we need lots and lots of helium. And the supplier's like, sure, no problem, because that was 3 weeks ago. So we now have this massive helium tank, well, a couple of them. Maybe I could show you a video of this in the lab. But all of our lab equipment, well, not all of it, but a lot of it uses helium. It's used in the collision cell for mass spec instruments, by the way. It's got different uses in different instruments, but that's its main use. And we don't use a lot. For example, during instrument runs, we'll use 4 milliliters of helium per minute. It's not a lot, again, but you got to have it. If you don't have it, you're screwed, right? So when I said, buy the helium, and they said, yes, we will, and then they called the supplier was, everything's cool. Now, 3 weeks later, we get the force majeure letter. And it's funny because my own lab people came up to me today with the letter. They're like, how did you know? I was like, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff I know that if you want to know, you can listen to my podcast. But I spend my time learning how the world works. And I know where stuff comes from. That's how I knew this was going to be a critical issue. So let me read the letter for you. Airgas regrets to inform you that the ongoing conflict in the Middle East, the subsequent closure of the Strait of Hormuz, Qatar Energy's complete suspension of its LNG and helium production, and other associated supply chain issues have impacted the supply of product. And they define product as helium. As a result of these circumstances, which are beyond Airgas's reasonable control, Airgas must declare an excuse of performance force majeure event effective March 17th, 2026, at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And yes, this letter was dated March 17th. At this time, Airgas is unable to estimate the exact duration of the force majeure. However, we will provide you updated information as promptly as we can. Check out this part. This is where it gets interesting. Airgas will allocate between all customers affected by the force majeure in an effort to mitigate the effect of this event. Currently, Airgas anticipates that it may be able to provide you with up to 50% of your normal monthly product consumption, based on the average monthly volume of product delivered to you for the prior 12 months. As of the effective date of this force majeure, any product you receive, get this part, any product you receive will be subject to a temporary surcharge of $13.50 per 100 cubic feet above your contracted price for such product. Surcharge. Helium surcharge. Okay. However, this is a dynamic situation and that could change quickly. We will issue further notifications as events unfold. During this force majeure period, you are permitted to obtain your product from other suppliers. Well, that's a relief. Upon your request, Airgas can provide you with a written consent to purchase a third-party substitute product. This letter, however, is not a release from any contractual obligations you may have to purchase product from Airgas once you are notified that the force majeure is over. In other words, you know, we will allow you to buy from somebody else if you could possibly find it, which you pretty much can't. Because, you know, helium is a global commodity, and if it's out at Airgas, it's out everywhere. Okay? Airgas values your business and regrets this situation. Please feel free to contact your account manager with additional questions. And this is signed Kevin Janowski, VP of Sales and Marketing, Airgas USA, LLC. Okay. So, by the way, I'm not blaming Airgas for any of this. Obviously, it's not their fault. What I'm saying is they had to declare force majeure because Trump attacked Iran. So Trump is burning down the world. Trump is destroying energy infrastructure. Trump created a war that didn't have to happen. And he caused the strait to be closed that was previously open. See, we didn't have a helium problem before Trump started the war. We didn't have a natural gas problem. We didn't have a sulfuric acid problem. We didn't have a, you know, an oil problem. We had free flow. And then Trump, you know, sells out to the Zionists, and now all of a sudden, you know, we don't have any helium. Well, I mean, we do at my lab because I can see these things coming, obviously. And we got all the extra helium that we need. Not only that, we increased our purchase quota, so that counts towards our ability to get more helium when we need it. So because I planned ahead, because I could see what was coming, our food lab now will not have to shut down. Isn't that great? So we will continue to test foods for heavy metals and glyphosate, and we'll do all the testing that we normally do for atrazine and E. coli and salmonella and all of that, so that you can get lab-tested foods at healthrangerstore.com. And although I was previously quite concerned about our ability to get helium, apparently we acted with enough forethought that we're able to get the supplies before Airgas declared force majeure. And of course, this is the way I work on everything. So when I'm urging you to consider food supplies, it's the same as me urging my lab employees to buy more helium. It's because I can see what's coming. Not difficult, actually, if you understand where things come from. And I know you do because you listen to my podcast. So you know that fertilizer is very strongly dependent on natural gas coming out of the Middle East. And it's all blocked at the moment. It doesn't mean there's no fertilizer in the world. It just means that all the other supplies are strained and increasingly scarce and expensive. And so that means farmers will use less fertilizer, which means crop yields will be reduced, etc. And that will end up in food shortages for the next year, even if there's peace tomorrow, which is highly unlikely. But yes, you and I, we can see these things coming. We know that with the Strait of Hormuz closure, there's a certain amount of oil and gas and sulfuric acid and helium in the pipeline that's like on the way, you know, that just made it out of the strait. But that is running out now. We're a little over a month into this war, and the pipeline of fuel that was on the way is pretty much done. Now we go into real scarcity. And for the month of April here, that we're entering now, for the whole month of April, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And I know Trump is saying that, oh, he wants to wrap this up in 2 weeks. Yeah, well, you know, wars don't work on a calendar schedule like that, especially when the other side has, you know, their own agenda and their own goals, and they're not going to just go along with Trump's calendar, it turns out. If anything, from what Trump is saying right now, he's going to walk away from the Strait of Hormuz and leave it in the hands of Iran, which probably means that, well, you know, this is not going to return to normal ship transport anytime soon. And that means that these energy shortages and helium shortages and fertilizer shortages, etc., could continue for quite an extended time, especially for Western nations that are allied with the United States, which initiated this war against Iran. I mean, think about it. If you were Iran, wouldn't you maybe restrict the strait to your enemies but allow your allies to use it? You could bet the U.S. would do that if they controlled it. And that's probably exactly what Iran will do, which means that, you know, our allies like South Korea and Taiwan and Japan and Europe, etc., probably not going to get much energy for a while, I would guess, unless they pay. Maybe if they pay enough, you know, they'll get some energy. You got to pay the toll, a couple million dollars per ship, perhaps. But if they don't pay, they're not going to get any energy. And so we're going to see scarcity. We're going to see, you know, shortages and energy problems and industrial problems and raw materials and sulfuric acid and polymers and all of this suffering from extreme shortages for at least the rest of this year and almost certainly well into 2027, even if this problem gets solved this year. And there's no guarantee that that will happen. So force majeure has hit us. But fortunately, I was able to move in advance of this, so we're actually fine. Our lab is fine. But other labs, they're screwed. Screwed. You know, these lab technicians are sitting there, you know, a month ago, like, eh, we don't pay attention to, you know, Trump or the war or the Middle East or whatever. We're just hunkered down doing our little mass spec stuff there. And then one day they get a letter. Force majeure? Oh, my God, how did that happen? Yeah, you should have listened to the Mike Adams podcast because he told you this a month ago that this was going to happen. Because I did. I told everybody a month ago this was going to happen. And I'm telling everybody now what's going to happen later in the year. You know, if you missed my interview with David Dubine, you should check that out because David Dubine also talks about what's coming. I mean, this isn't actually rocket science. It just takes, I don't know, honesty to say something that is truthful, even if it contradicts our lying president or, you know, the White House bullcrap, which is just nothing but constant lies. To tell the truth takes courage, but it's not technically difficult. It's not hard to see what's coming. It's just for some reason, some people find it morally difficult to tell the truth. That's always been surprising to me. I've never had any problem telling the truth, which is why I've been banned everywhere, obviously. So the truth is these supply chains are in horrible shape, and it's going to get a lot worse for the world. And yet, those who are prepared will be able to help themselves make it through all of this. And my job is to help you stay ahead of the curve and stay prepared. So what can you do to stay prepared? Well, obviously, you can continue to find my podcast and so on at brightvideos.com. I've got a lot of great interviews that are coming up. You'll love them. They're very informative. You can also download all the free books we have, almost 50,000 free books now, many of them on preparedness, at books.brightlearn.ai. You can read my articles at naturalnews.com and also articles from our other writers there as well. And then, you know, you can create your own books or you can use our AI engine at brightanswers.ai. There's a lot of tools that you can use to stay informed and get prepared and get more self-reliant and more decentralized and more off-grid. You know, check out my show, decentralized.tv. And, you know, every episode is highly informative. So there's plenty that you can do. And you probably don't need helium, you know? So you're not going to worry about the lack of helium. You're just not going to get your birthday balloons or something, which is fine with me, because where I live in Texas, all these idiots in Austin keep releasing all their helium balloons that end up, well, they're Mylar balloons, and they land on my ranch. You know, I have to clean up all their stupid balloons, you know? And happy birthday! Yeah, your garbage, your birthday garbage landed on my ranch. I don't appreciate that. I guess that won't be happening for a while. No more helium. Yeah, happy birthday. Keep your balloons down to earth. How about that? You don't need to let them go. I mean, come on. It's just freaking Austin morons. You know, do it old school. Fill your balloons with your stinky breath. Like we all used to do, you know, just fill it with your stinky breath. At least when you let go, it'll just fall to the ground. All right, enough of that. Sorry, I was going to go somewhere even more dark, and I decided not to. I vetoed myself on that one. Okay, so thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting us and our laboratory and our store, healthrangerstore.com. And yes, our lab will continue to function because we already planned for the force majeure, so we're doing fine. So thank you for all your support, and take care. You know, the vaccines must have really done a number on people's brains because I have never witnessed people, Americans in particular, becoming dumber than they are right now. And let me give you a couple of examples of this so you know what I'm talking about. the Artemis II rocket mission that's supposed to be sending four astronauts for some reason around the moon and then back to Earth. This is being celebrated by a bunch of people who are just ecstatically screaming like little girls, we're going back to the moon! We're going back to the moon! Not exactly, because nobody's landing on the moon. It would be like if you took a walk behind the back alley of Walmart and then you announced, I'm going back to Walmart. Yeah, you didn't go in Walmart. You know, you saw the dumpsters in the back and some pallets back there and some trash and a few homeless people and some drug addicts, maybe a couple of prostitutes and I don't know, Lindsey Graham back there with a children's magic wand or something, but you didn't go back to Walmart. You went around Walmart. So, you know, flying behind the moon is not going back to the moon. And you know why we're not going back to the moon? Because, how to say this? I'm not convinced we ever went in the first place. I have no doubt that we've put astronauts in orbit and that we have, they've been in the International Space Station, whatever. That's no problem. You can orbit the Earth for a while, even for months. And then, you come back down out of orbit. But landing people on the moon and then bouncing around the moon to pick up moon rocks and stuff and driving around with your little moon dune buggy and then getting back on the lunar module and blasting back off into moon orbit while you leave the cameraman behind, that is a very different mission than just flying around the backside of the moon. So no, we're not going back to the moon. Even if we went the first time, we're still, or more than once, we're still not going back to the moon by flying around the back of the moon. Those are not the same thing. And you would think that that would be obvious to people. But no one's got any brains left anymore. Here's another example, not to do with space travel, but Trump is now saying that he has achieved regime change in Iran, which was one of his goals. So early on, Trump said, we're going to achieve regime change. And, we're going to kill off all the leaders there, which by itself is a war crime, by the way. And then we're going to encourage all the people to rise up and overthrow their leadership. And then they're going to make me their supreme leader. Trump actually said that at one point. And he also said specifically that Iran, can only have a new leader in place if I approve of them. So the whole point of, quote, regime change is to topple the current regime in power and then replace that regime with a new puppet government that answers to Trump. That's what Trump meant by regime change. Well, now he says we've achieved regime change because we killed the top leaders and Iran now has new leaders and that's a change. So therefore that is regime change and we've won. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Somehow the Trump MAGAtards, who clearly are just low IQ morons at this point, whoever's left, they think that's regime change. They're like, well, they changed the regime. That's not what Trump meant by regime change. What Trump meant was install a puppet regime that we control, that is friendly to the U.S. and will follow orders like we did in Iraq, right? Or like we did in Ukraine in 2014. That's what's meant by regime change. Not just, oh, they changed the leaders and now we're going to call that victory. For some reason, people believe that. They think that that is regime change. Now, I understand we've had dumb people for a long time. I mean, we've had on the left-wing side of things, we have a lot of Democrats who think that a man can become a woman. And that is one of the dumbest things that has ever been widely pushed and believed. And, we have doctors and surgeons who think that they can change a boy to a girl with the help of a scalpel. It's just, I mean, that's not just dumb, that's demonic. But yeah, there's a level of idiocy in that that's just off the charts insane. But I saw Glenn Beck recently, who's also one of the dumbest people alive, in my view, saying on social media, well, we have to go in and, get, get the nuclear weapons material, get that from Iran because they have illegal, you know, illegal weapons program. Israel has illegal nuclear weapons. They're blatantly illegal. They violate U.S. law to provide such weapons to a nation that engages in war crimes. That's actually codified under U.S. law. So if you're going to go in and take illegal weapons away from anybody, you should conduct a military raid on Israel. But Glenn Beck, being dumber than tree bark, will never say such a thing. He's just, that guy's not too bright. And then, by the way, Marco Rubio came out and he said that the Strait of Hormuz has to be allowed to open back up because he says, quote, anything Iran does to impede commercial traffic is illegal. And for all these countries that love to talk about international law, he says, it is a violation of international maritime law to impede the free flow of travel. Meanwhile, the U.S. is bombing speedboats off the shores of Venezuela, right? The U.S. is actually conducting piracy on the high seas by seizing oil tankers. And on top of that, if the U.S. controlled the Strait of Hormuz, you can absolutely bet that the U.S. would restrict ships to only its allies. In the same way that the U.S. violates international law by issuing sanctions against countries and sanctions against oil. And then they say, well, that oil is sanctioned and therefore we can steal it. Or the same way the U.S. starts a war in order to pillage the oil out of a country, whether it's, you know, Iraq or Iran or Venezuela for that matter, or Russia, that there was an attempt there. So for Marco Rubio to be citing international law is just the dumbest thing I've ever heard, given that he routinely advocates violating that law, or various laws, I should say, not just maritime laws, but, you know, U.S. law, as well as treaties that have been ratified by the U.S. Senate. You know, if anybody's violating laws, it's the U.S. And speaking of the Strait of Hormuz, I've also seen a few people who found some animated map of the Strait of Hormuz, and they saw there's half a dozen small ships that were allowed to pass through the strait by Iran. And then they get all excited. Oh my God, it's open. It's open again. It's open. And they say, see, we won. Trump, he kept his promise. It's like, what do you say? What do you say to these people? They're just, you know, too dumb to calculate reality. The only ships that are currently passing through the Strait of Hormuz are doing so with the permission of Iran. And many of those ships are not oil tankers. They are other kinds of ships that some of them belong to Iran, by the way. Some of them belong to Iran's allies, or they're flagged for, you know, Pakistan, let's say. Or they paid in Chinese yuan, and so they're allowed to pass. And there are ships that are on the way to China, or ships that are on the way to India, or something, you know, through a deal that Iran has allowed. No ships are passing through the Strait of Hormuz without Iran's permission. And remember that normally there would be 100, sometimes 120 ships a day that would pass through the strait. Nothing on that scale is happening. There's single digits numbers of ships passing through the strait only with Iran's permission. So, of course, the Strait of Hormuz is not, quote, opened. It is controlled. It's controlled by Iran. But again, there are so many just incredibly vaccine-damaged, dumbed-down, brain-dead, lower brainstem, reptilian humans walking around that they think, oh, it's open, you know? Dude, how did you figure out which side of the toilet paper to use today? You know, how did you remember to tie your shoes? You know, how are these people that dumb? That's my question. And I'm serious about this question. I've never seen people dumber. I mean, even the transgenderism wasn't this dumb. And that was pretty dumb. They put tampons in men's restrooms and things like that. That was pretty dumb. And no offense to those who are, I'm not using the word dumb in a medical context here. I'm using it to mean stupid. So no, I'm not trying to offend those who are unable to speak. So apologies if that's the case. But I'm referring to people who are extremely retarded. So yeah, I'll just shift this to the word retarded, which is probably somehow more offensive. Then we've got examples of just raw stupidity that are almost too insane to believe. So, for example, Kristi Noem, I forgot her exact, is she Homeland Security? Is that what she is? Kristi Noem, former governor of, what was it? One of the Dakotas. Sorry, I don't recall her past state occupancy. But anyway, it turns out, it just came out that her husband has been living a double life of a tranny. Apparently, he's been doing some kind of video chats with other freaks and perverts where he would dress up like women and he would inflate balloons and put them up his shirt to be like large women's breasts. Where you tie off the balloon, he was trying to position that to be the nipples, but they were all twisted up and everything. He's like, that's a disfigured tranny, you know? I mean, oh my God. And that all came out, and then Kristi Noem is acting shocked, just so shocked that this came out, and she said her family has been blindsided by this revelation that her husband has been leading this double life. Apparently, some of this came out from the leaked emails of Kash Patel, whose email account was hacked. okay, so yeah, it gets levels of insane here. But what's stupid is that people believe that she didn't know. Are you kidding me? And anybody who believes that is pretty stupid. But also, there's a lot of stupid people who believe anything Trump says. So when Trump says, oh, we're negotiating with Iran and they've agreed to almost everything, people are like celebrating. Yay! Trump is such a leader. He's such a winner. And the markets go up. And it's like, people, your only source for that claim is Trump himself, who is a known pathological liar. Why would you believe anything he says? Especially when it's in his interest to say that, and he and the people around him are obviously working to manipulate the markets, right? So Trump is having imaginary negotiations with people that don't exist, and then half of America believes that's happening, and they believe they're winning because Trump says so. That is just retarded. And that's a level of cognitive retardation that is just off the charts insane. And millions of Americans are falling for it. It's just like when Trump said, well, we achieved regime change. They changed their regime. People are like, yeah, we did. Again, how dumb can you be? Now Trump is saying that my mission was to prevent Iran from possessing a nuclear weapon, and I succeeded in that mission. He now says that's his new thing. But that's what he said last summer. He said, we've destroyed their ability to create nuclear weapons. It's completely destroyed for years. Well, that didn't last long, you know, until Israel came along and said, oh, you have to attack them again. So now Trump is doing the same thing he did last June and saying, now we've destroyed their nuclear weapons, and now we can declare victory and walk away. And the Strait of Hormuz is still closed, still under the control of Iran. And actually what the U.S. did is they flew some 2,000-pound bombs over some buildings in Iran, and they dropped the 2,000-pound bombs to make a giant big fireball explosion that didn't damage anything underground. And then they claimed that we destroyed all of Iran's weapons, like as if they were all in one spot, you know? And again, a lot of Americans, probably the vaccine damage idiots that trusted Trump on Operation Warp Speed, they're like, yeah, we destroyed their entire weapons depot. Mission accomplished. We're the winners, man. And they will believe that. While Iran keeps launching missiles against Israel, you know, every week. But people will believe it because they, for some reason, they're just dumb enough to trust Trump. And you really have to be retarded to believe anything that Trump says at this point. But hey, if Trump is going to declare, you know, declare victory and walk away, then okay, great. I can live with that because I want de-escalation. But have no illusions, none of the U.S. military, you know, goals were achieved in this at all. So what we're really seeing is the mass mental retardation of the American people. And maybe it's not a new thing. Again, people were dumb under Biden and they were stupid under Obama and they were just as dumb under George W. Bush, who was also retarded. I mean, we've had a long history here of dumb presidents and retarded voters, but it seems like it's reaching peak retard at the moment, actually. I've never seen people more retarded than they are right now, just completely, I mean, snorting hopium like it was baking soda or something. I don't know, do people snort baking soda? That sounds painful. Or like it was cocaine, I guess. Snorting hopium so much, like telling themselves, this is all part of Trump's, you know, 75D plan. First, we're going to pretend to lose, and then we're going to convince Iran that they've won, and then we're going to flip it around to where we win and they lose. Yeah, you know, and that's their whole logic. It's like, that doesn't even make any sense. You're just telling stories. Like, nothing you said is possible. But they don't care. It's just whatever gets them high on their own supply. That's where they are. They're just, I don't know if it's just people that have lost their souls, they've lost their way, they lost their job, they lost their mission in life, and all they can cling to is the cult of Trump. And whatever Trump says, like one day Trump says, we're going to control the Strait of Hormuz, and they're like, yeah, we're going to control the Strait. And the next day Trump's like, we don't need to control the Strait of Hormuz. And the same people are like, yeah, we don't need to control it. We're winners anyway. You know, it's like, you just contradicted yourself. So we're still winning. You know, it's like, what do they say? Don't waste your time teaching a pigeon to play chess, because you'll just annoy the pigeon and it will shit all over the chessboard. That's Trump with his voter base. Trump's the pigeon. He's not playing chess. He's not playing checkers. He's just an idiot at this point. And he's shitting all over the world and America and MAGA and all his voters. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care about anything but himself. And if you believe anything that Trump says, then you're the idiot more than him. You're the stupid one. And you need to recalibrate. And of course, I'm not talking to you listening to this, because I don't think I have any listeners who still believe what Trump says, because I, you know, I have intelligent listeners, right? But I'm saying, you know, the theoretical you out there, if you still believe Trump, you need to recalibrate your intelligence, because you're just being misled and you know, probably vaccine damaged along with all that. As Daniel Davis said, quote, President Trump has been making completely contradictory policy statements, changing objectives and adjusting standards for either destroying Iran or negotiating with them or walking away and leaving a mess for Europe or our allies in the region. No one knows for sure what his position is on this war. And he goes on and he says, everybody in the world has to wonder what's coming next, including our own troops in the region. That's how empires fall. When nobody knows what the declining power is doing, and allies and adversaries alike are left to guess and take action based on their best estimate, which may be bad for us. So, yeah, even, you know, Daniel Davis, Colonel Daniel Davis, who's the host of the popular show Deep Dive, who previously supported Trump like many of us did, you know, years ago or before all this, even Daniel Davis is saying, you know, Trump's lost his mind. Just completely lost his mind. Alex Jones is saying it now, too. And that's where we are. So the question is, how dumb can people get? How dumb can people get? And back to the rocket, the Artemis rocket, you know, one of the questions is, why, if you're just going to fly people around the moon, why do you need four of them? Why? What's the purpose of four astronauts? To sit in a rocket and take a rocket ride around the moon and not ever get out of the capsule. What's the point of that? There is no point. We've already done that. You know, allegedly, we did it decades ago. We did it 50 years ago. So what's the point of this? There is no point. It's just, oh, you're going to look out the window, if there even is a window. What are you going to, you're going to test if the toilets work on the rocket ship better than the toilets on the USS Gerald Ford, because those toilets don't work. You can't even say they suck because they don't suck. That the suction mechanism is broken. But I guess NASA is going to answer the most important question of all. Can American astronauts shit in space? If so, it'll be called a mission success, even if they shit themselves. Like, that's probably where we are. It's like, it's a total success. Zero gravity defecation. Yeah, we're America. You know, that's what it's going to be. We flew around the moon. We shat on the dark side of the moon. And all the Trump supporters would clap. Oh, yeah, this is so awesome. We're such winners. Look at our advancements. We're leading the world in shit technology. And I don't know about you, but if I got launched into space for this whole trip, which apparently is going to be several days, wouldn't you want to get out and take a look around at some point? How do you know you even went around the moon if you can't see? And if you don't get to step out, you can't see anything? Like, I've just been in this capsule, just been shaking violently for 3 days. I don't know. I couldn't even shit because I was so nauseated. How do the astronauts even know they're going to the far side of the moon, right? They're just along for the ride, and it could be a simulator. Who knows? I don't trust anything coming out of NASA. So bottom line is, you know, watch out for really stupid people. Because they're everywhere. They're everywhere. But at the same time, fortunately, Trump is actually waking up a few people who are coming to their senses, like they're snapping to attention, like, whoa, what the heck, man? He's been lying to us this entire time. And I'm very happy to see those people. And there are more and more of those people. You know, sometimes it takes a while to break out of your slumber and realize we've been lied to, and Trump did not put America first, and food prices are not getting more affordable, and the fuel prices are not going down. Everything's getting more expensive and worse, and the lies are growing more extravagant and outrageous. When you realize what's actually happening, when you face reality, then you have hope of doing something about it. The people who are the worst off are those who are still mesmerized by the spell, the sorcery of Trump. And there's still a lot of those people. But, you know, you can do your part and help snap those people out of it. Show them, you know, reality. Say, hey, look, the Strait of Hormuz is still closed. Look, the energy is not flowing out of the Persian Gulf. So what do you think that means for the world? And I was shocked to learn over the last few weeks that people don't know where fertilizer comes from. They don't know where natural gas comes from. They don't know where helium comes from. And as a result, they're just shocked when this war over there affects them and their food prices over here. It's like, what, did you think this was all disconnected? Did you think that, like, we're in a separate world or something? How do you not know where our world's energy comes from? But apparently people don't know. They literally don't know. It's unbelievable. But I guess everybody's getting an education, you know, the hard way right now. So we'll see where it goes. All right, thank you for listening. Mike Adams here. You can catch more of my broadcasts at brightvideos.com. If you want to get prepared with more food and supplies for the whatever end of the world scenarios they're cooking up right now, shop with us at healthrangerstore.com. And if you want to follow my articles, they're at naturalnews.com. So thank you for listening. Take care. Well, if Trump is serious about backing off of the Strait of Hormuz and saying that he's willing to have a solution that doesn't involve the U.S. controlling the Strait of Hormuz, because that's been reported by the Wall Street Journal and others, then let's look at the aftermath of the total loss by Trump and the United States military. What would the aftermath be? Now, remember, but let's step back. What were Trump's original stated goals? Number one, completely destroy the existing Iranian government regime and have regime change by having the people rise up and overthrow their own government so that Trump could install a leader of his choice. He said they can only install a leader that I approve. He said all that. Okay, so that was number one. That hasn't happened. And then secondly, even though the Strait of Hormuz was open before Trump started this war, Trump then later set out a goal that we have to reopen the Strait of Hormuz so that oil and energy can flow. And that hasn't happened, obviously. The only ships that are passing through the strait are those that are allowed to pass, according to permission from Iran. So the net result of this is that Trump has lost. That is, if this is really his plan to back away from this, he has lost in every way possible. He hasn't overthrown Iran. He hasn't destroyed the country's government. He hasn't defeated Iran. He hasn't taken control of the Strait of Hormuz, and he hasn't even opened it back up. He's just going to walk away after destroying the world's energy infrastructure. Just walk away from this and say, ah, Europeans, it's all your problem now. You solve it. At least if Trump is telling the truth right now, which is always doubtful. Nevertheless, if this is what's going to happen, then think about it. Iran will have inherited total control over the Strait of Hormuz. And that will allow Iran then to dictate who's allowed to pass through the strait, just as the United States would have done if it controlled the strait. See, the U.S. always commits economic sanctions against its strategic enemies. So if the U.S. controlled the strait, they would say no ships are allowed to pass through here if it's delivering energy to China or you know, Russian tankers or Pakistan or North Korea, etc. Instead, Iran is going to control the strait, apparently, if it goes this way. And Iran will clearly say, okay, no ships are allowed to pass through if they are tied to the United States, Israel, the UK, or US allies, such as probably Australia, New Zealand, Taiwan, etc. And the only way to allow your ships to pass through the strait will be to break off diplomatic ties with Israel. That's something that Iran has already stated previously. And that would encourage countries like Spain and France and Italy, etc., to break all diplomatic ties with Israel in order to prevent their economies from collapsing due to a lack of energy. On top of that, Iran will be able to charge a toll, you know, a couple million dollars per ship, which is a tiny, tiny portion of the value of the cargo that's passing through the ship, obviously. And then on top of that, all of that money, which would be potentially hundreds of billions of dollars a year for Iran, they will use that to not just rebuild from the damage that the U.S. has inflicted to buildings and infrastructure with all of its bombing, but also Iran will clearly pursue a nuclear weapon at this point. Why? Because Israel assassinated the Ayatollah Khamenei, who had the fatwa against using nuclear weapons. And now the people that are coming into power in Iran are clearly going to say, well, the only way to defend ourselves in the future is to have nuclear weapons. We know how to make them. Let's do it. So within a few months, they will have nuclear weapons if they don't already have them, and they will announce that they are a nuclear nation. And then that's the end of Israel attacking them or the U.S. attacking them, because at that point they could just nuke Tel Aviv, which a lot of people are rooting for, by the way, or they could just nuke the United States Navy in the ocean, just launch a nuke over, you know, an aircraft carrier. But hey, you can take out an aircraft carrier with a drone, apparently, as the USS Ford has experienced, the Gerald R. Ford. You don't even need a nuke. You just need a couple of drones, but whatever. My point is that Iran, once it has control over the strait and the money from the strait, and if the U.S. backs off, then Iran will have nuclear weapons. And I actually think that's a good thing. That will bring more stability to the region because it will stop Israel from continuing to commit genocide and attack its neighbors. And, you know, you can imagine very simply, Iran would say to Israel, look, you stop right now. You stop the attacks on Lebanon. You stop the attacks on Hezbollah and Hamas and the Palestinian people. You have 24 hours. And if you don't stop the attacks, we will nuke Tel Aviv and we will obliterate your entire country with one nuke. And even if Israel says, well, we'll nuke you back, it doesn't matter. Because Iran is a very large country that can actually absorb a lot of damage. And what Iran clearly realizes right now, as most of the world does, is that in their view, the destruction of Israel is the single most important thing necessary for their own survival and for the survival of the Middle East and the stability of the Middle East. Israel wrecks everything on purpose because it's driven by these end times satanic cultists who want a global apocalypse. And so from Iran's view, stopping Israel or destroying Israel is the only way to achieve peace in the region. And Israel has proven, as I've said before, that it is incompatible with human civilization and it cannot be allowed to continue to be recognized as a nation by other nations. And I've said before, I'm not advocating nuking Israel, but I'm advocating that every country cut off all diplomatic ties and all economic ties. No trade with Israel, no recognition of Israel as an existing nation because it has forfeit that right through its genocidal actions repeatedly. And then whatever happens between Iran and Israel, you know, I guess that's between them. But Israel's continued existence on this planet, run by these Zionist end times lunatics, is clearly a threat to the safety of all of humanity because of the risk of escalation into an Israeli-initiated nuclear war. Because Israel's a rogue nation, right? Total loose cannon, the most likely nation to escalate to nuclear weapons first. And if they do that, then Russia gets involved probably, and China may get involved, and Pakistan may get involved, and maybe Turkey gets involved at that point. So Israel, if they want a world war, they actually have a means to escalate this to world war, probably by nuking Iran. And so, in my view, what Trump should do is pull the entire U.S. military out of the Arabian Sea area, get it out of, you know, the Red Sea, get it out of that whole area near Iran, and instead take the entire military and sail right next to Israel and send in your 10,000 Marines and arrest the war criminals in Israel and reclaim the nuclear weapons that Israel illegally acquired from the United States. Take the nukes away from Israel, and then we may have a margin of stability and safety in the region. If anybody needs to denuclearize, it's Israel. So that would be a noble mission of United States Marines and Special Forces, to go in there and dismantle the, you know, pedophile empire or the Epstein empire that is modern day Israel. So we can only pray for that outcome. I doubt that's going to happen. But in the meantime, if Trump backs away from the Strait of Hormuz, then he's handing the future of the Middle East to Iran. And he's admitting a total humiliating loss for the United States. So that's where we are. Thank you for listening. You can catch more of my podcasts at brightvideos.news and my articles at naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening. Take care. Talk of war de-escalation and peace in the Middle East is nonsense. The media is reporting that Trump may be looking for an off-ramp and that Iran is willing to talk terms of peace. Well, I believe Trump is looking for an off-ramp. I don't believe that Iran is willing to give up its primary points, all the main things that it has stood for this entire time, which is that its inherent right to pursue nuclear energy, its control over the Strait of Hormuz, its demand for reparations, its demand that Netanyahu be held criminally accountable for his war crimes, etc. those demands from Iran are seemingly non-negotiable. So if anybody is saying that, oh, Iran's going to talk peace, well, not on America's terms, they're not. I mean, it's very clear to everybody in Iran that they must acquire nuclear weapons as a means of self-defense. It's also clear to everybody in Iran that maintaining control over the Strait of Hormuz is their primary leverage point against Western forces. And as long as they maintain that control, then they have leverage. If they give up that control, then they have no leverage at all. So if you think that Iran is just going to surrender the Strait of Hormuz, and if it's just going to surrender to the demands of the West about nuclear weapons, then you're kidding yourself. That will not happen. Iran has already paid too much of a price to get to this point of desperation of Western civilization. Iran's not going to surrender now. If anybody's going to be surrendering here, it's Trump. And maybe that's going to happen. Maybe the terms of peace are that the U.S. military leave and that control over the strait goes to Iran. And then Iran can charge a $2 million toll per ship or per tanker in order to achieve some form of financial compensation, because I don't think the U.S. is going to pay money to Iran, obviously. But there might be a deal where Iran charges a toll and everybody else is okay with that because, hey, paying a toll is better than not getting the ship through, because not getting the ship through means global industrial collapse and food collapse, etc. So paying the toll makes a lot of sense. So to step back and summarize what I'm saying here, there might at some point be peace talks, although I don't think we're there yet. And what Trump has been claiming over the last few days is obviously delusional fiction. But there might eventually be peace talks, but it's not going to be peace on America's terms. That's quite clear at this point. And at the end of the day, what that means is that Trump has lost. The Pentagon has lost. America lost the war because it did not achieve its primary objectives of, number one, overthrowing the regime of Iran, and secondly, taking control over the Strait of Hormuz. Neither one of those has been achieved. What did the U.S. achieve? Well, the bombing of a lot of surface buildings, a lot of economic destruction, didn't even get the nuclear material, which was another goal that was set out by the United States. So zero successes for America, but wasted hundreds of billions of dollars and killed a lot of people. And at the end of the day, it leaves Iran in control over the Strait of Hormuz and in possession of its nuclear material, which it no doubt will turn into nuclear weapons in the coming months. Again, you can't blame them for doing that at this point, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you build nukes as a means of self-defense? Of course you would. Everybody would. So what has this war actually accomplished? It has made Iran stronger, and it has made America weaker. And it's also shown the total insanity of Israel, the rogue nation that just wants everybody to die. They want the whole world to burn. And that's become increasingly clear. So, total loss for America, if this is the way it plays out, and that's what it looks like, that's where this is going. See, I think something happened quite dramatically over the last few days in terms of Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump finally being shown polling numbers where Trump has finally realized he doesn't have 100% approval. His approval number is like maybe 29%. At this point, I mean, depending on which poll, I think it's actually lower than 29%. I think it's like 10%. I say 9 out of 10 Americans completely oppose this war because of the economic consequences of it. Raising gas prices, raising food prices, causing supply chain disruption, etc. So no, this isn't making Trump popular. And Trump is finally, I think, being told this information. And I think there's a panic inside the White House. The panic is spreading. And they're realizing, oh my God, if we don't turn this around, the midterms are a complete loss. So we have to end this war. Well, they've tried threatening Iran. They've tried to end it with bombs. Even Pete Hegseth said, we negotiate with bombs. Well, your negotiations with bombs failed. Because you're not walking away with any wins at all. You're walking away with a total loss. You get the big L on this one. And from that loss, how is Trump going to regain the trust of the American people? The people that he told that he would get us out of wars. And the answer is he can't. Trump is toast. There's no recovery from this. So anybody advising Trump says, oh, you could turn this around. There's still time before the midterms. No, there isn't, because people like me are never going to trust Trump again. Never. Under no circumstances. Because he showed that he is a con artist, a huckster, a charlatan, a traitor to America, that he sold out America for the interests of Israel. And he showed that. He demonstrated it again and again and again. There is no recovery from that. So, okay, yeah, they can end the war, and I'm all for ending the war. Doesn't mean you're suddenly viable as a candidate in the midterms or as a party in the midterms. I mean, Trump himself is not up for election, but his party is, and they're going to get destroyed. So will there be peace? I hope so, but it probably won't happen on America's terms. And that means America is the loser. And that means that the illusion of U.S. global dominance is shattered. And this is the turning point. The battle of civilizations has reached a point of transformation. And the American Empire is no longer the dominant force. It can no longer force its will upon every other nation. And Iran is emerging as a major world power that can hold its own against the most powerful military in the world, the most powerful navy in the world, etc. So from here forward, things change dramatically. It means that your life is about to get way more expensive. If you're an American, that is, or if you're an ally of the U.S., you're no longer going to be able to just pillage cheap energy from the rest of the world, as has been done for, you know, generations. The world is going to stand up against America. The world is going to move away from the petrodollar. The world is going to continue to build out its own military capabilities, including nuclear weapons. And the U.S. is falling in terms of world dominance. So get prepared for all of that. It's going to make life a lot more challenging for all of us, of course, and more expensive. Of course, we are still blessed in North America with abundant domestic energy, so that will help cushion the blow. But we're going to have to actually trade with the world more instead of just printing dollars and forcing the world to accept those dollars. Because those days are pretty much coming to an end. And that's been our business model. You know, we print dollars and then we use our military to force other countries to sell their stuff in dollars. And that's changing right now. And Iran broke the back of the petrodollar. So there you go. Something to think about. All right, you can stay tuned with more of my podcasts and interviews at brightvideos.com. And also, you can read my articles at naturalnews.com. Thank you for listening. Take care.
When I was practicing mainstream medicine and I was working in psychiatry at the time, you know, I realized that people were not getting better. And I had seen this in cancer medicine earlier in my career. And I began to find out about natural healing. I finally kind of put two and two together, had like an epiphany moment when I realized that all the things that I had learned about that were successful helping people not only supported the terrain, but actually were different ways of facilitating the body's detox mechanisms. And many, many clients that have learned these from me have had just amazing health results.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and you know, we talk about the virus theory versus terrain theory a lot. That's a hotly debated topic. And
One of the experts that we often interview and refer to on that is Dr. Andrew Kaufman. But he also has areas of knowledge far beyond just that debate, but also about once you understand the terrain theory of how disease comes about, its true origins and its true prevention strategies, then you understand the importance of focusing on improving your terrain to automatically reject states of disease. And he joins us today. Dr. Andrew Kaufman, welcome to the show. I look forward to talking with you about this.
Yeah, same here. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
Oh, it's great to have you on. And I also want to thank you. You have created a very informative multi-part docuseries that we'll be streaming for free coming up soon at brightu.com. We'll talk about those details later on. But give us your take, kind of the big picture. Why did you think it was important to teach this course about terrain theory, or it's not the theory, but terrain workshops of how people can use this knowledge to protect and enhance their health?
Well, Mike, what happened is that when I was practicing mainstream medicine and I was working in psychiatry at the time, you know, I realized that people were not getting better. And I had seen this in cancer medicine earlier in my career. And I began to find out about natural healing. And I started, you know, studying various people who had a successful track record. And I didn't know what all of these procedures that they put people through had in common until later on, when after I uncovered the fallacies of germ theory, I wondered, you know, what's really causing health problems? And of course, I was introduced to some of the aspects of the terrain model, like pleomorphism, from looking at the work of Bechamp, for example. And I finally kind of put two and two together, had like an epiphany moment when I realized that all the things that I had learned about that were successful helping people not only supported the terrain, but actually were different ways of facilitating the body's detox mechanisms. And this was, you know, a major breakthrough in my understanding, and it helped me really hone the procedures that people can use to help their bodies heal. And many, many clients that have learned these from me have had just amazing health results. In fact, many of the conditions, if not all, that are said or that I was taught, you know, in medical school as being incurable, lifelong conditions that we could just basically manage, turns out the body can completely reverse those conditions. It's quite astonishing and quite simple to help your body achieve.
See, that's very profound what you're saying right there. And I know that your docuseries, your course, really gives a lot more detail on this. We'll talk about that coming up. But, you know, Western medicine, obviously, is still based on the germ theory. And most people, most consumers of Western medicine, still just automatically by default believe in that they think that, oh, I quote, got cancer, as if like something gave it to me. And then I quote, have cancer and I have to get rid of it. You know, it's in the language. I mean, you're a psychiatrist, you understand the power of language, but the way people talk to themselves about disease or health is part of the problem, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think cancer is a great example to think about that, because what is the medical name for chemotherapy is called cytotoxic therapy.
Right. Because, admit it right there.
Yeah. These chemicals, right, are actually poisoning the cells. Now, they, of course, will tell you that, yes, they poison the cancer cells, but we're talking about killing and poisoning in order to heal. It's sort of, a little bit of a paradox as to why you would even think that could be successful.
Well, right. But continue, if you would, please, about my point that people still use the language that promotes, because, you know, we're talking about terrain theory, but also there's mind-body medicine, which is part of this. And people's beliefs, which is expressed through their language, defines their own experience of health versus disease. And I got to thank you too, Dr. Kaufman, because it was your teaching of me that allowed me to completely change my worldview about germ theory. And ever since I changed my worldview, I've never been infected with germs. It's never happened since. So it's just like, wow, you mean we could actually make a change in our understanding? But then again, I do have a healthy lifestyle, of course, that I have healthy terrain, et cetera. But talk to us about the power of the paradigm.
Well, you know, you've hit on a really a key aspect, and there's a number of ways you can look at this. Of course, you know, if you worry and think a lot about something, that thing is more likely to be true. And that could be in a positive way, too, right? If we are obsessively thinking about succeeding in, you know, an athletic endeavor or in a business endeavor, we're more likely to succeed, right? Because we pay more attention to it, we do more things to serve that goal, and it's more likely to come about. And this can have negative connotations as well, and especially when there is fear involved. And, you know, I think one of the aspects we could talk about this is the nocebo effect. And this is kind of the opposite of the placebo effect, where we have a belief or a faith in something that it's going to benefit us, and then we realize that benefit, even if the thing itself is not even possible to cause that, right? And I'll give you, you know, an example of saline, right? Salt water. If we believe that we're being given a drug that's going to be really helpful, but we're really just given salt water, we can actually show a benefit in scientific studies. But the opposite is also true. If we believe that we're receiving a substance that's harmful, but we still only get salt water, we can actually have the harmful effects from it. So one example of this was a study done with cancer patients, actually, and they were told they were being given chemotherapy, but were just given saline. And not only did they experience nausea and vomiting after being administered the salt water, but some of them even lost their hair.
Wow.
In other experiments, we know that putting salt water in a nasal spray can actually produce cold symptoms. So without any, you know, any germs involved, I'm talking about sterile medical grade saline. So it's a very powerful aspect that our beliefs and our psychological state can have a huge, huge effect on even our physical health.
Absolutely. So then when you talk about the terrain in your workshops, and let me mention, this starts airing, by the way, April 11th at brightu.com. You can register right now, sign up for it. It's free to view, or you can optionally purchase it and download it ahead of time and have all the files locally and watch it on your own schedule, or you can watch it for free. But when you teach terrain, Dr. Kaufman, how much, I mean, I know you talk about water, you talk about food, you talk about micronutrients and minerals, but do you consider the psyche also part of the terrain?
Yes, absolutely. It's critical. You know, in mainstream Western medicine, we have this false separation of the mental and psychological from the physical. And even when they think about mental illness, for example, they believe it has a physical cause. And so, like, when they look at stroke patients and they show that they have a tendency to be depressed, they think, well, the stroke caused damage in the brain and that led to them being depressed, rather than perhaps they just lost function. They faced their own mortality. They could have an existential crisis. You know, let's talk about those more realistic interactions. And no matter what, there's really very, very minimal thought put into the bi-directional relationship between our mental or psychological, or I like to call it psycho-spiritual experience, and our physical health. But there are, you know, excellent examples in many different ways these can interact that would affect your healing. Like, one simple thing is, if you want to try to change your lifestyle to become more healthy, that could uncover psychological issues. For example, you could have a food addiction that could be based in childhood trauma, even. And in fact, there is a wealth of information showing that childhood sexual trauma is highly correlated with extreme obesity in adults. And there are many other examples, and I think cancer is a really important example, that there almost always is a strong psychological component related to cancer. And in fact, in some cases, it could be the primary component. And there are people who were able to completely heal from cancer, and there are many documented cases of this, only or predominantly by doing psychological work. Now, I don't recommend isolating psychological work or physical work. I think it's always important to address both, but this relationship is completely discounted in Western medicine.
I'm glad you said that both are really important to consider, because I'm a big believer in that as well. And I want to ask you about heavy metals versus nutritive minerals, including, let's say, trace minerals like zinc or selenium or copper, which has a very narrow window of efficacy, but then toxicity at higher doses, including, I believe, some psychiatric effects. But I want you to talk about that, because, and let me just set it up, because I've seen people go to counselors year after year after year, trying to deal with a problem that's clearly linked to exposure to toxic metals and toxic foods. So it's like, hey, you know what? You could save thousands of dollars and years of time, clean up your diet as you go to the counselor. You know what I mean? Do both, but don't forget about cleaning up your intake here. But please talk to us about metals versus nutritive minerals.
Yeah. So, and I know, you know, that, poisonous or toxic heavy metals is an area that you're especially interested in. And we, of course, our body needs metals, not mercury, lead, and arsenic, but we do need zinc, like you mentioned. And it is possible, of course, to have too much of a good thing and also to have zinc in a form that's not biologically compatible, like in a form that's made in a chemical factory versus what's provided by nature. And, you know, you must realize, too, that virtually any substance in the wrong amounts can become a problem for our health, or even poisonous, even something like water. And it's hard to get too much water, but it is possible. And I have seen it in a clinical condition, and it can actually kill you. So we definitely don't want to overdo these things. But what I think is the more common problem is that we generally are exposed to heavy metals through many sources, which could, of course, be air pollution. It could be chemicals on things that we interact with, like something like pressure treated lumber, for example, uses arsenic compounds. We could get it from pharmaceuticals, including immunizations, and we can get it from food. And there is a phenomenon that is well documented in the research literature, and I call it toxic metal substitution. And this occurs when we have not enough of a mineral that our body wants, but we do have a heavy metal present that has some similar chemistry. And one example of this that has been shown in experimental studies is between zinc and lead. Now, these metals that are nutritionally vital for us, like zinc and many others, what they do in the body is that they form metalloproteins. So the proteins, which are the workhorses of all the functions in our body, many of them, in fact, definitely more than half, no one really knows exactly what percentage, but they require these metal cofactors. So with zinc, one of the most common zinc metalloproteins are called zinc fingers. And these are areas of a protein where zinc is in a binding site in the protein. And this is where these proteins bind DNA, for example, or they're said to bind DNA. Now, if we have even a small deficiency in zinc, but we happen to have some lead exposure, of which there are many sources, including drinking water, our body could substitute the lead in the zinc finger. And you know, still have some function, but not nearly as good a function as if the zinc were present. So heavy metals can cause damage to our tissues. You know, it's normally thought through oxidative pathways, but they can also decrease the function of our proteins, including enzymes, by this toxic metal substitution. So even if we try to use, let's say, chelating substances to remove lead from our body, if there's not enough zinc around, the lead is going to stay there because it preserves some degree of function, even though it's harmful overall. And some of these substitutions, when they test the activity of an enzyme, for example, they find that it's only a fraction of the activity of if it has the proper minerals. So it's really important, if you're trying to help your body purge toxic heavy metals, you also have to make sure that somehow you get the right minerals in the right amounts in your body so that your body does not want to hold on to them in this way.
See, that's really critical. I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, as you know, I run a mass spec lab and we test lots and lots of foods and substances. And I've been trying to explain to people for many years that there's some amount of lead in many, many common foods, including chocolate bars, you know, cacao. There's cadmium in coffee. There's usually lead in turmeric and a lot of these spices. By the way, the spice rack is like a lead mine. By the way.
Yes, yes. I recently reviewed some research on that, and there are very few trustworthy brands for herbs and spices.
Yeah, it's true. And the thing is, you know, a lot of these spices come from, let's say, India or Turkey or wherever, and I'm not blaming those countries, but they are agricultural products that take in what's in the soil, right? And if there's lead in the soil, those plants will uptake that and incorporate it into their tissues. And that's, you know, in the lab industry, we call that incurred lead, just like you can have incurred glyphosate, whatever. But my point is, which is about your course, Terrain, the workshops, is that we have to constantly support our detoxification that is natural, that's intrinsic to our bodies, because you can't live lead-free in this world, period. It doesn't happen. None of us can. So we constantly have to detoxify. So can you speak to the importance of that constant daily habitual, you know, the health habits that detoxify naturally?
Yes. Well, you know, this is something that is really present in many ancient cultures. Like, they knew this, and the spring, the time we're in right now, is the most traditional time that you find this, right? And fasting is one of the most common practices that you will find across cultures, because we can go out into the animal kingdom and observe animals fasting when they get sick and injured. And that provides an obvious model. And what we're doing really with fasting, in my opinion, is that we are removing the need for all the digestion resources, because it turns out it takes a lot of the body's resources to process and digest food. And if we temporarily remove that and allow the body to focus on other things like healing, we can have excellent results. So I kind of look at this overall issue as there are two states of health that you could be in, right? You could have health problems, and they could be, you know, very mild and even subtle and confused with things that we say are just part of aging, all the way up into, you know, serious life-threatening illnesses. Now, in all those conditions, the best approach is to do a full protocol to stimulate your body to kind of have a reset back to health. And a lot of that is going to be around facilitating your body's removal of these toxic substances that we're ubiquitously exposed to. And another aspect of it is going to be to take in the proper nutrition so that your body has all the resources to do the healing that's desired. Now, once you're in a good state of health, then you would be in what I would call the maintenance phase, which I think is what you're mostly referring to in this question. And I think, of course, it's important to have as clean a lifestyle as possible on a day-to-day basis. And that doesn't just include what you eat and drink, although, of course, those things are of utmost importance, but also your home environment, the things that touch your skin, the hygiene and beauty products that you use, the air you breathe, and you know, whether you put chemicals on your lawn, and many, many other things. So you want to live as pure and clean and natural a lifestyle as possible in the modern industrial world, realizing that we can't control exposure to everything. And then from that perspective, once you've achieved that, then you can do a periodic cleansing ritual. And this doesn't need to be a full, you know, 30-day or 3-month protocol. It could be a 3 to 7 day fast, for example. It could be, you know, doing coffee enemas, you know, 1 weekend a month, or doing them for 2 weeks, you know, every 6 months. So kind of like a mini protocol. And this kind of practice, and it's going to be, you know, unique for every individual, depending on the demands you put on your body and the particular exposure to these untoward substances. But I think that's the kind of approach that will maintain your health and longevity as much as possible.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I also, I want to ask you to talk more about the daily routines. And let me just remind the audience here that your course will be available streaming for free on brightu.com. That's the letter U, like university, brightu.com, beginning April 11th. It's called Terrain, the Workshops, Natural Healing by Andrew Kaufman, and it's free with registration, or you can optionally purchase it and download it then immediately upon purchase. So I believe, and you know, feel free to disagree with me. You know, you're the guest today, so whatever you think is appropriate, but I think it's important to sweat. And so I make a point, you know, I exercise, I jog, and I like to jog with some heat, actually, like with, you know, a hot day. I live in Texas, so that's pretty easy. And I intentionally jog and sweat. And on top of that, I never use any kind of store-bought personal care products. I don't use their deodorant, their shampoo, their lotions. I don't use sunscreen at all, but I'm in the sun almost every day. I don't get sunburned. I don't use their garbage. I don't use their crap laundry detergent either. And as a result, I feel like this is the way to do it, is don't poison your skin, but let your skin expel whatever toxins it wants to on a regular basis. Does that make sense? Or do you think I've gone wrong in some area there?
I think we have a pretty similar lifestyle, Mike. Sweating is an amazing, you know, process that our body goes through. And I want to even broaden that out a little bit, because anytime you observe something coming out of your body, that is your natural detox mechanisms. Now, with sweat, perspiration, which, you know, is an integral part, actually, of my heavy metal protocol, which is part of the natural healing course, because it's been shown in many research studies that metals come out in the sweat. And it's not just metals. Other toxins come out of your body as well, like some of the plasticizing chemicals, for example. Almost any toxin that's water soluble in the body will come out in the sweat. And interestingly, in the skin, we have a sort of backup system for the liver. The acute and the phase one and phase two enzymes that we have in the liver, which are our body's mechanism of processing foreign chemicals that enter our body into something our body can deal with and excrete, is partly duplicated in the skin. In fact, this is so much so that even in the pharmaceutical industry, they have tried or created models using skin cell cultures to give them information about how the liver would deal with pharmaceuticals, because it's an easier experiment to do to test these new pharmaceutical drugs. So our skin is very good at processing these substances and very good at excreting them. And, you know, we in our modern lifestyle, we do a lot of things to avoid sweating. We look at it as an inconvenience. You know, we're not doing physical labor. We're not outdoors as much. And of course, exposure to the sun is also very important. So I am fully in support of sweating. I do this on a regular basis as well. I have, you know, a workout program, and also I have some land, so I'm out there doing various types of things to work up a good sweat. And of course, remember that all that bad stuff is coming out in the sweat, so you do want to wash off after. You want to change your clothes and not sit with that sweat on your skin. But it is a really key mechanism that our bodies have, and probably part of the reason why people accumulate chronic illness is because they don't participate in those simple natural mechanisms like sweating.
There's a fear of sweating among many, especially Westerners today. They're afraid to sweat. They buy literal antiperspirants. I mean, think about that. It's to block your sweat. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And also think about it, home construction, especially since about the late 1970s, really moved away from natural open ventilation to closed boxes that are air conditioned. The climate is entirely controlled. And, you know, it's funny, you may appreciate this, but even though, of course, I have air conditioning too, I change the temperature based on the seasons. So in the summer months, I keep my air conditioner at about 80. And then, you know, in the winter, I will allow myself to only heat when it drops below about 62 Fahrenheit, something like that. So I'm compromising, you know, I'm semi-controlling my environment, but I'm letting my body feel the difference between summer and winter, even indoors. And of course, I'm outdoors a lot either way, but I think I'm the only person who does that, because everybody else is like, no, it's crazy. I just set it on 75 all year. That's it. You know?
Well, you know, I remember as a kid visiting my grandparents in Florida, and my grandfather, who, you know, grew up during the Depression era, he would refuse to turn the air conditioning on at all. And it'd be difficult to sleep at night because you're drenched
yeah,
in
true.
Sweat.
Yeah, true.
So I'm sure you're not that extreme, Mike,
no.
But, you know, a big part of why we're suffering from a lot of health issues compared to the past is because we're not in the natural environment. We have climate control, right? We have electric lighting and a 24-hour work cycle. And so the more you can get back to nature, the better off your body will be. So what I do is I actually... you know, it's starting really this time of year when it's not, you know, freezing cold. I work outside. I'm fortunate enough to work from home, and I don't do these kind of interviews and have an outdoor studio, but I really go out on the back porch and do all my work. So I'll be, you know, sweating when it's hot out. I'll be moving out into the sun and back to the shade. To balance that out, be breathing fresh air the whole time I'm working. And that just makes a huge difference, you know, to
Absolutely.
How I feel. And, you know, I almost don't like going back into the house.
Yeah, no, I know the feeling there. I have now spent 1 year working out with my gymnasium, which is in a forest on my property. And I just have a collection of kettlebells and pull-up bars and dips bars and push-up bars just sitting there in the forest. And it's the best thing ever. And I only can work out outside now. And I've only missed 2 days in the whole year due to weather. Only 2 days. Because I don't care if it's cold.
Well, now you live in Texas, though, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's not fair. I'm up in the tundra.
Yeah, that would be different. Yeah. Absolutely. But I did do kettlebells with gloves on one day. It was so cold, but I wouldn't want to do that frequently. Anyway, I want to remind people again, the course, which begins streaming April 11th, is called Terrain, the Workshops, Natural Healing by Andrew Kaufman. It's available free with registration. One episode streams each day on a repeated loop beginning April 11th. Or you can optionally purchase the whole course and download it and support Dr. Kaufman's work as well as supporting our platform. And you can sign up at brightu.com. Now, this is the conclusion of part one of our interview with Dr. Kaufman. And we're going to continue in part two. We're going to be talking about pine trees and turpentine and natural medicine and why it is always bashed by conventional medicine. That's in part two. You'll be able to find that at brightvideos.com. So thank you for watching part one of our interview. Take care. Yes, the world is getting crazy, but here at the Health Ranger store, we're putting together a survival supply assortment for you. If you go to healthrangerstore.com/survival, you'll see what we put together for you, including iodine and iosat. That's a specific brand name of potassium iodide that's FDA approved. Or we have the nascent iodine here, which is less expensive in terms of the iodine that you get. These are available in case things go nuclear. It's clear that you will not be able to find any of this for sale anywhere. All the inventories will be wiped out, like what happened after Fukushima in 2011. So if you want to get your hands on some iodine, this is a chance to get it right now. healthrangerstore.com/survival. In addition, we have many other survival items for you here, including some silver solutions, some spirulina available in bulk and at a discount, and then a large assortment of storable organic food that's laboratory tested, including our Ranger Bucket sets. Here's a 195-day supply. We've got the mini buckets, and we've also got number 10 cans available of freeze-dried fruits and vegetables and other things like miso soup powder. Here's some of the buckets. There's a big variety available. Here are some of the number 10 cans right here. Remember, a lot of people are missing fruit. They don't have enough vitamin C in their storable food. So, you know, getting bananas and pineapples and strawberries, especially, again, certified organic, freeze-dried. That is the highest quality with the highest nutrient preservation that you can get in any kind of a storable food format. All of this is available right now and so much more. Just go to healthrangerstore.com/survival. And because the freeze-dried foods last for so long, you know, even if you don't eat them this year or next year, just keep them on the shelf. They're going to last a very long time with good preservation, a long shelf life, and they will have value no matter what happens in the world. Now, of course, I'm praying for peace. I'm praying for de-escalation. I don't want to see World War III break out, and I certainly don't want it to go nuclear. But we're dealing with insane times and insane leaders and insane situations. Who knows what could happen tomorrow or next week? Disruptions could happen here in the United States. There could be, you know, domestic attacks that disrupt supply chains here in the U.S. So stock up early, stock up now, get your emergency food, emergency medicine, iodine, anything else that you think that you might need. Get it now. And by doing so, by shopping with us, you'll be supporting our platforms and our AI engines that we offer for free. That's funded in part by sales from our store. So shop with us at healthrangerstore.com/survival and help yourself get prepared and also help us bring you more free tools and platforms that can keep you informed no matter what happens in the world. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.